is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else that you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls, and if you want to advertise with us or have questions you want us to answer on the show, make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. I'm still in Portland until Friday. Cody, you're in Chicago. Being in Chicago, have you gone to the West Loop to see the Fire Garpacks billboard in person yet?
I have not seen it in person, only online. I think just like you and many Bulls fans now have seen that making the rounds on Twitter. But from the sounds of it, it was a, 22-year-old Bulls fan started a GoFundMe and somehow came up with $8,000 for a Fire Garpacks billboard at the corner of Racine and Lake. And just judging from the pictures and having driven past that area before, like, it's pretty obvious, pretty evident to see there, Sean. No doubt about that. But
I almost feel like we need to, once I get back into Chicago, we need to like record a live episode like below the billboard or something, invite some people to come out for it or something.
That would be amazing. Just a little Facebook Live too of us and that being the background. Well,
Did you see what it looks like? It says at the top of it, we are no longer seeing red, which is kind of counterproductive because I feel like seeing red is like, I mean, I get that that's the Bulls slogan, but I feel like that when you say I'm seeing red, that usually means you're mad and these Bulls fans are mad and they want Garpacks to be fired. So I feel like it's a little mixed messaging there.
Well, that and the other thing, I know this was probably just the bad timing award on the part of the guy who started it and fundraised the money via GoFundMe. And don't get me started on stupid GoFundMe campaigns. It has its terrific, terrific abilities to help out people in need in tough times. It also just kind of jumps the shark sometimes, I feel like. But I guess the ironic part is this comes as the Bulls finally picked a direction. They finally, for the first time in years, act like they know what they're doing. They're making these fringe roster moves at the margin. Like, the billboard goes up as the Bulls front office has had a few good weeks. You know what I mean? And again, you can say what you want about draft night and the return from Jimmy Butler. I still think the Bulls need a star really bad and did not acquire one in that trade whatsoever at all. And that's a big red flag for me in the rebuild and the hard part. But like, at least they picked a direction and are backing it up with some sensibilities in many ways. And that's when the billboard goes up after all these years of them wandering aimlessly through the desert or whatever.
So I think what's funny about this whole thing, Cody, is I agree with what you're saying. Yeah, they're doing a rebuild. This is the time when they want fans to be patient. I think what this really says, and I think this has been kind of obvious, and you and I have talked about this just in the days and weeks since the Butler trade, since they really started on this rebuild. It's one thing if like teams are doing a rebuild and there's like either a front office in place or a star in place or like a future star in place, like a prospect that they have, where fans can say, okay, they're going to be bad for a few years, but this is our next guy. Like, this is the guy who's going to be our next star. This is who we're going to build around. I don't think any Bulls fans, even now that they picked this direction, like, okay, they picked a direction. That's the first step. They still have a lot of work to do in terms of actually rebuilding the roster. I don't think any fans really have any faith that Gar and Pax are the people who are the right people to have in place to do that. And
no,
I think
that's
where this is coming from.
Yeah, and that's correct. And look, some of this rebuild's going to be luck. Like, can the Bulls get a top one or two draft pick next year and maybe get Michael Porter, you know, and get that real
sure.
true star and elite guy? But, I mean, I think Gar and Pax, like, in this, I guess, new era of the Bulls, like, maybe they should just change their attitudes, too. I think they should go take a selfie with that billboard in the background and just smile, give a little thumbs up, and have the Bulls' Twitter account tweet it out. Throw it in the Bulls' Snapchat thread, you know, later in the week. Like, just embrace being the villain at this point, you know? Like, why not? You got your job security for a few more years because the rebuild's going under. Like, just go have some fun with it. Like, the fun of next year is going to be making sure you get a lot of ping pong balls and show some progress with your young players. Like, there's not much pressure right now in the way of wins and losses. So go have some fun with it. Like, take a picture. I think they should do that. Wouldn't you love it?
I don't know if Luca or Samantha are listening to this, but that would be a great idea for some off-season content that I think the fans would actually enjoy. But then you're kind of opening yourself up, though, for, yeah, get Benny the Bull over there, maybe trot out David Nwaba, the guard that they picked up, see if he's on board with the rebuild, you know, put that through as a test.
Hey, Zach LaVine's a cool dude. Like, you know, like, I think if you sent him out there, with access to Bulls social media channels and just had him hang out around there, you'd get some good content. I think people would love it. I think they'd get a laugh out of it and just embrace this rebuild a little more, you know?
Having it out there, right, you know, you'd have him go out there wearing the Space Jam jersey that he wore at the dunk contest, because you remember at their introductory press conference after the trade, after they got him and Dunn marketing in the trade, he said, like, he grew up a huge fan of Space Jam, so he's excited to play in the same arena as Michael Jordan. So, like, he could do that, kind of emphasize it, so that even if fans are kind of mad at, like, the gesture, they can still be like, oh, well, he's wearing a Space Jam jersey, and, like, he's a cool guy that we like, so we can't be, like, totally mad at it.
Well, here we go. It looked like that was kind of around an old warehouse building or something like that, a building that wasn't being used. Just go erect a basketball hoop about 10 feet off the ground, doesn't have to be perfect, and have Zach LaVine go dunk on it. How about going and dunking on it?
Well, how healthy is his knee, though? How healthy is his knee?
What he says he's about ready to be back in like 6 weeks from now is what he's telling everyone.
I don't think it would.
Just one dunk.
If the front office wants to like restore people's faith in their rebuild and their ability to do this, I don't think having Zach LaVine, who's recovering from a torn ACL, do a dunk at this abandoned warehouse for a publicity stunt for their Snapchat channel is really the move. But.
Okay, how about David Nwaba? Did I say it right?
Yeah, Nwaba. Right? And we'll talk about David Nwaba in a little bit. But first, I wanted to let you guys know that today's episode of Locked On Bulls is brought to you by SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy tickets with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. And with SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, and they're fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or band or musician or theater show in person, and SeatGeek will help get you closer to the action for a great value. I personally have the SeatGeek app on my phone. You do too, Cody. We've used it multiple times to go to different concerts over the last few months. It's been fantastic. It's so easy to just find tickets, find seats that are in your price range. And, you know, it's just the best way that I've found to buy tickets. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And if you want to get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately find the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every seat is fully guaranteed, so you can shop with confidence on SeatGeek. You have to make it your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, sports, concerts, comedy, theater, whatever you want to go to. Best of all, if you're a Locked On Bulls listener, you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. What you need to do is you need to go on the App Store on your iPhone or your Android phone, whichever App Store you use, download the SeatGeek app, totally free, sign up, create an account, again, totally free, go into the Settings tab, enter the promo code LONBA, and then when you make your first purchase on SeatGeek, you will get $20 off your first off your tickets. It's really just the best, easiest, smartest, fastest way to buy tickets, and there's really no excuse to use anything else to buy tickets. So go use the free SeatGeek app, use the promo code LONBA today. So Cody, there's, you know, in this time of the offseason, a lot of times there's like a little bit of, you know, downtime. There's not a whole lot going on. We have to kind of reach for content. Bill Simmons came through for us yesterday. He put Jimmy Butler on his podcast in an hour and 15-minute long interview, and he said some stuff. He talked about the Bulls a little bit.
Yeah, this isn't even reaching. This is just great stuff from Jimmy. He reflected on, I guess, his standing with the Bulls would be the best way to put it, and just what he was informed at his exit meeting with Gar Forman and John Paxson. And Jimmy had some cool stuff to say. And by cool, I mean just enlightening stuff. He made clear that he didn't think the Bulls knew what they wanted to do with him and rebuild until the last minute. Because a couple weeks before the draft, he left the exit meeting with management, basically thinking he was still going to be a Chicago Bull. And I thought, in some ways, Sean, I think that could get tied back to Travell Gaines, his trainer, on the night he was traded at 4:37 a.m. in Paris, where Jimmy and his boys were, tweeting that Gar Forman was a liar. I thought that lended credence from Jimmy previously saying Travell speaks for himself to Jimmy passing the point along, here's where Travell got this. I told him that I thought I'd still be a Chicago Bull, and I think somewhere along the way, lost in translation, Jimmy also mentioned, and Jimmy does this a lot, he'll say like two things, like, I ignore trade rumors, but then I kind of felt a trade was coming. At one point, he also admitted that he probably took some things the Bulls said to believe he would stay in Chicago when what they meant were they were still up in the air and no one had any clue. But what did you read into everything he said?
Well, first of all, there's a 0% chance that Jimmy doesn't pay attention to trade rumors like he claimed on the podcast. Like, that's just not true at all.
Jimmy says a ton of, like, he said that when he got traded that his agent called him and gave him a heads up, and he goes, okay, cool, sure, I'm going to get back to my spades game with D-Wade and Melo. And I'm not saying he didn't continue his spades game, but I don't think Jimmy's quite as chill and nonchalant about that as he makes it seem to be in hindsight.
I also don't think there's any way he didn't watch the finals, which is another thing that he said.
Yeah, right? Like not a minute of it?
Like, that just, like, he wants to give off this perception that, oh, I'm so cool and I'm so focused on myself that, like, I don't even pay attention to anything that's going on, so nothing that anybody says about trade rumors or whatever can affect me. I think it's all an act.
Yeah, a lot of it is.
But I thought Jimmy was... I thought that interview was really engaging. I thought he said some interesting stuff. I liked how he talked about... You know, I thought some of the stuff about like those LA pickup games were pretty funny that he talked about. Some of the stuff about the Bulls was kind of interesting, where he basically said that like he basically admitted the team was dysfunctional.
Yeah, he did. He didn't deny it. He had a chance to deny it, and he didn't like pile on new info. But that was one of those. It wasn't a non-denial denial. It was just basically a confirmation because he didn't give a denial. You know what I mean?
Right.
So. And like, I mean, Jimmy made the good point too on that podcast. Like he said, I'm not one to go behind people's back and tell reporters this and that so they can leak it, that Jimmy is super unhappy about this and that. Like I've gone on record to the media a lot of times with my thoughts and beliefs and it's got me in trouble, and he's completely correct. I mean, the two times in the last 2 years he got in the biggest hot water was when he criticized Fred Hoiberg in Hoiberg's rookie season a couple of years ago. And then when he and Dwayne Wade piled on their younger teammates and ended up getting fined and benched for the start of a game, like, Jimmy's not a guy that I don't get the sense he's a guy that goes behind people's back a lot either. I just think he makes himself out to be as cool as he possibly could be with that act and about getting traded here. But at the same time, in between there, like, things are woven in. Like, he's like, hell, Chicago was my home for 6 years. It's kind of hard to leave, you know? So... I thought it was a good interview. I thought he was reflective. I don't know that it held a lot of deeper meaning other than reinforcing the belief that the Bulls were really dysfunctional last year and that management still, 2 hours before they made the Jimmy Butler trade, weren't even sure what they were going to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think there was a mandate the day the Bulls woke up on draft day that they were going to trade Jimmy, which I think most of the reporting has reflected. But I also think some people assume that they were 100% dead set on trading Jimmy. And I do think it was when their price is met, they'll trade Jimmy.
Right. And I thought the most interesting and the most telling thing that he said in this thing, in this interview, was that they were more focused, the Bulls were, on building with him rather than building around him, which is actually like a direct quote from John Paxson after the trade deadline, after they did the Tom Gibson, Cameron Payne trade. And I think you could kind of tell just from the way Jimmy said that didn't really sit well with him. And I mean, I tend to agree with him that when you have a player as good as Jimmy Butler, you have to pick players that fit around him and not try to fit him into something else when you don't really have the vision to do that. Like, I think that is a failing on the Bulls. And I'm not going to say, oh, well, they definitely shouldn't have rebuilt. They shouldn't have traded him. They definitely made the wrong move by going in this new direction. But I think...
You're saying they shouldn't have signed Dwayne Wade or Rajon Rondo last year, basically, is what you're saying.
I'm saying they really did not do as good of a job as they could have.
No. They shouldn't have signed
maximizing Jimmy Butler's strength while he was there after he had his breakout year and became the star that he is. And I think you could kind of get the sense from this interview that Jimmy Butler feels that way as well.
Yeah, and look, I think Jimmy's going to be, he's really happy to be reunited with Tibbs. I think we went over this, like,
yeah.
They were smiling so much at that opening press conference, it was ridiculous. Like, Tibbs hardly ever smiles, and he was so freaking happy. So, I think a lot of, I mean, I think the podcast is another chapter and kind of closing another chapter on Jimmy Butler's career in Chicago. There will be a time next year where he comes back to Chicago for his first game as an opponent against the Bulls. And what he say something about, like, his goal is to score 5 points in that game at least or something. Like, so Jimmy, you know, just playing it chill, setting those expectations low.
Right, that's just another part of it. You know, he's going to try to drop 40 in that game.
Yeah. Hey, you know who might have taken over as the Bulls' best defender now that Jimmy Butler's gone, Sean?
Who?
David Nwaba.
That's right. So the Bulls actually made a couple of minor moves this week while we were off. They claimed David Nwaba off of waivers from the Lakers. They cut him.
Six foot four guard with a 7 foot wingspan.
Yeah.
If all the journalism and written word about him is to be believed.
Yeah, he played about 20 games for the Lakers last year after being a D-League call-up. People around the Lakers like him. You know, he's athletic. He plays hard. He's a good defender. And the other move that they made was they signed Antonio Blakeney, who was on their summer league team, to a two-way contract, which basically means that he's going to mostly be in the D-League with the Windy City Bulls, but he can be with the NBA team for up to 45 days before they have to sign him to a regular minimum contract. So this is just a couple of minor moves they made. It's not going to really impact them, but you know, you have the opportunity to pick up a couple of guys who are young prospects who might develop into something someday, have them on cheap contracts. The Nwaba contract is non-guaranteed. They can waive him until January 10th and have it totally not be guaranteed. So if he doesn't work out in camp, they can cut him. It won't cost him anything. I think these are both good moves for him.
Hey, can I give credit on the Nwaba move? This is an absolutely 100% perfect move for the rebuild. And here's why. Like you said, he's going to play hard. He has a lot to prove. His attitude has been lauded at his past stops. He seems like a grounded individual having come up through the D-League. I believe Luke Walton and Kobe Carl, I think, was the Lakers' D-League coach. Like, they've both said really good things about him in the past. But he has no offensive skills whatsoever to bring the Bulls besides, like, dunking in transition after he steals the ball or cutting to the hoop if a teammate draws a double team, but I don't think any Bulls on the entire team will draw a double team next year. So he probably is worthless offensively in the half court, other than maybe some tip, slam, put back, dunk, stuff like that. So, like, here you got a guy with a good attitude who you can kind of mold his offensive game, but he'll probably never help you win a single basketball game, like be the difference maker on offense to get you fewer ping pong balls than you would want by way of having more wins. So I love the Nwaba move because, like you said, what is it, January 10th, I think you mentioned that you can part ways with him with, like, no financial repercussions really, other than the time he spent with you. So, like, good move. Like, does he grow into something? I don't know, but if he's a good attitude to have around and you can work him into being a rotation player, I'm all for it, and he's not going to ruin the rebuilding job in year one when they need to tank for Michael Porter.
Yeah, I mean, we've been very critical of a lot of moves that Gar and Pax have made over the last year or so, but you got to give them credit for this. This is exactly the kind of move that they should be making right now if they're rebuilding. Take a low-cost flyer on a young guy who's athletic, who fits the style they want to play, and hope he develops into something, and if he doesn't, you can just cut him. I mean, and then I also want to point out that in the last week they've signed two guards who are both probably better than Cameron Payne.
That's factually correct. That's true. Like, I mean, I feel like we mentioned this on the last podcast, but is it possible that Cameron Payne, like, doesn't even make it to, like, their fourth preseason game, or, like, doesn't make it to their opening night roster?
I mean, I wouldn't put anything past them at this point. I think it's pretty clear that he is not, as much as they want to say publicly, oh, we still believe in him, we still think he's a rotation player. You know, they said at their season-ending press conference that he needed to get in better shape, and then he was terrible at Summer League. So I just don't see any way that they can seriously look at him and see what they've seen so far and think, okay, this is a guy that we think is going to be a long-term piece in the rebuild. And the fact that they've added two more guards to their roster who have both shown more in the past year or even the past couple of weeks at Summer League than he has. Like, I have to think that that's a possibility more so than it was before Summer League.
Well, I just went all in on the David Nwaba move. So now it's your turn to go in. So that's my boy. You get Antonio Blakeney. Okay? That's your guy now.
I like him. He can score. He can hit a shot. He showed some energy off the bench for the Bulls, for the Summer Bulls. I know the coaching staff liked him. He was at LSU. He went undrafted. He's not going to play much for the Bulls, obviously, because he's on a two-way contract, but I just thought it was shocking that they were able to get him on a two-year two-way contract, because those two-way contracts can either be 1 year or two. They got him for a two-year contract for that.
Team option the second year, obviously,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and it's so. Basically the way these two-way contracts work is the starting salary for them in the G League is $75,000. But they can
get rich, baby.
But they can make up to $275,000 if they spend the maximum of 45 days in the NBA. But if they spend more than after they spend their 45 days in the NBA, the team has to either cut them or sign them to a regular minimum contract in the NBA. So, you know, if he really impresses, you know, there's a chance he might just make the roster.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It's not a situation where these D-leaguers are getting rich, but it's a lot better than, like, the $26,000 some of them were making for, like, 7 months of play and then having to work off-season jobs. At least the upper echelon guys now on those two-way contracts. So, like, that's good to see because it's a way that fewer of the D-leaguers or G-leaguers, I guess I should say now, just out of respect for you, not actually the corporate sponsorships and everything, Hyken. But
you know all about that.
I know you're about that. But, like, it's just good to see the NBA trying to keep some of its fringe talent stateside instead of going overseas, where they can still get definitely more lucrative contracts, no doubt. But at the same time, at least a little bit more of a draw for the best of those fringe guys to stay here. Another guy we need to talk about regarding money, and another guy who's not going to have quite enough money to, like, buy a yacht yet, is going to be Nikola Mirotic. He might have, if free agency went completely to plan, Sean.
Yeah.
But free agency hasn't gone completely to plan for Nico. And those hopes of him getting $18 million annually on a multi-year deal, not going to get that. And he's still a restricted free agent, still property of the Bulls by way of them controlling his rights in restricted free agency. It doesn't appear he's going to get an offer from anyone else besides the Bulls at some point. What's the latest?
As far as I know, and like I've asked about this in the last couple of days, nothing has changed. They still have their offer to Nico. It's not as high as he would have hoped for in restricted free agency, but because there's just not a market out there for guys anymore. It's really just nothing has changed since the last time we talked about this a week ago. If he wants a bigger offer from another team, that offer just isn't out there. Nobody has the cap space anymore. Nobody's going to want to tie up the cap space because any offer that any team can give him at this point, they will tie up their cap space, and then the Bulls will probably just end up matching it anyway. So unless Nico's people, the Bulls have no reason to up their offer because he has no leverage. He has no way of going out and finding another offer to come and bring back to them and say, hey, are you going to match this? He's going to either have to sign that one-year qualifying offer for a little over $7 million, or he's going to have to just take whatever their offer is that they're giving him.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the interesting point. What do we think it is? Like, I mean, I feel like we've been throwing out $12 million range, like, the last time we talked extensively about Nico after the market seemed to dry up for him and some other restricted free agents. I mean, are we looking at $10 million now, $10 million per year now for 2 or 3 years? Instead of Nico getting like 3-54 what he wanted and us throwing around like 3-40 last time or 3-36. I mean, are we looking at 3-30 now for him? Like, I feel like every day that nothing happens, I feel like we're inching closer to that, don't you?
I think you're probably right about that, Cody. I think he's probably not, anything more than, you know, $10 million. If he even gets to $10 million at this point, because the Bulls could really lowball him if they wanted to.
Yeah, well, he's got to get more money than Chris Felicio, doesn't he? Like, you can't see Nico coming back on, like, 3 years, $21 or $2 million when Felicio's making $8 million a year.
Right, I feel like that's sort of the baseline. And I wonder if the Bulls maybe played their hand too early by giving Felicio that deal. Because if you look at some of these other deals that you know, these fringe big men like that are getting. You know, you look at the deal that Willie Reed just got with the Clippers for the minimum. Yeah. You look at the deal that Dwayne Dedmon got with the Hawks for $6 million. I would say both of those guys are probably better NBA players than Chris Felicio is right now, and he got a fully guaranteed four-year, $32 million deal. So I wonder if the Bulls could have gotten Felicio for less if they had waited longer. But at the same time, I feel like he was the guy that they discovered. They wanted to make sure no team tried to steal him away with the poison pill offer sheet or something, and so they just wanted to get that done quickly.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. And the other thing is, like, I mean, the Bulls, you have to reach the salary floor, which is 90% of the salary cap, which is, what, $101 million? So you got to get 99, excuse me. Yeah, you're correct. So that's obviously whatever, $90.9 million they're going to have to get to, something like that, that ballpark, or $90 million. It's to me, like, you got to get there at some point. So if you gave Chris Felicio $1 million more or even $2 million more per year than he deserved over the next 4 years, it's just not a big deal to me whatsoever, because that's a guy you want to keep in your program anyway. And like with Nico, part of the reason too, you got to remember, if the Bulls re-sign Nico, they don't just view him as a guy who's a part of their rebuild or who will help them be in contention when they're ready to win. They also view him as a trade chip. And you know what's a more valuable trade chip? We just saw this in baseball with the White Sox trading Jose Quintana to the Cubs. It's a guy on a really good, fair contract. So that Nico contract that you could have been around $15 million per, if that's all of a sudden around $9 or $10 million per, that's a much easier contract to unload. It's worth more. You can get more in return by way of young players. So the Bulls still view Nico in two lights, even though they're going to bring him back on board as soon as they do. They also know they can flip him in the coming years if he performs at some sort of consistent level and remains, obviously he hasn't shown to be a consistent starter, but if he can still be a rotation guy on a fair contract who fits the need in the modern NBA. So to me, like, I guess that's the difference on those, where I think they view Nico as much more of a trade chip, an asset to flip in the coming years, than they do Chris Felicio. So if you overpay Felicio by a little bit, it's like that money had to go to someone on your roster at some point eventually, and you're probably not looking to trade him, so that's not a big hang up. So I guess that's my tangent on the contract stuff. I think that's how the Bulls look at it.
I think that's pretty fair. How do you think Rondo is going to fit with the Pelicans?
Is there going to be any spacing on that team? Like, Drew Holiday is, he's fine as a three-point shooter. Like, part of the reason they got Rondo is because they like playing him off the ball. And look, I know Boogie Cousins and Anthony Davis can step out and hit the outside shot, but they don't have any really good three-point shooters. It's like Solomon Hill and I guess Etuan Moore. There you go. Etuan Moore in the rotation. Like, I think it'll be okay. I don't think it's going to be a disaster. I don't think he's really going to flourish. You know what I mean? I think they wanted him there because he does help them win more next year than giving Etuan Moore too many minutes or giving Drew Holiday all 40 minutes a game at point guard. And don't they have a bunch of other bums in their rotation or whatever? Like, Jordan Crawford's in it.
What did you just say about Jordan Crawford?
I am putting everyone on the New Orleans Pelicans that is not Boogie Cousins, Anthony Davis, or Drew Holiday, and I'm calling them a bum. There you go. There you have it. Everyone else gets lumped in that category.
I think you need to show some respect to my man Steezus, though.
Oh, my goodness. Go have at it. Have at it. Teach me.
So the thing I thought was interesting about the Rondo thing is Alvin Gentry went on a radio, did a radio interview yesterday, and he said that they want to play Rondo at the one and Drew at the two and play them together.
Okay.
Which I don't know how that's going to work.
Well, isn't part of the dynamic too? I mean, maybe this works too, because Boogie and Anthony Davis, obviously they do a lot of damage around the rim. Like, Boogie's terrific offensive rebounder, has terrific moves around the basket, bullies his way there all the time. Anthony Davis, a premier player in the NBA, I mean, can dunk over anyone. But there are also guys that step out. So maybe they're going to do that thing where Rondo kind of dribbles through the lane in a little loop and there's no one on the block, like Robin Lopez just taking up space because Boogie and Anthony Davis step back, like, and can pull the defense a little bit. Maybe that's the line of thinking. But, like, again, I don't think this – I think, again, I think it's fine. It was like a year and 3 million or 3.3 million, right? Like, there's not a lot of...
3.3 biannual exception. So it's really, there's not a lot of risk with it. The other thing that's important to talk about is he's really tight with DeMarcus Cousins from the year they spent together in Sacramento, and DeMarcus is going to be a free agent, and DeMarcus recruited Rondo hard, so this might be part of what that was about.
Yeah, like, I mean, again, I think Rondo will be a good locker room presence for him. I don't think it changes their win paradigm a lot, like maybe a game or two, a couple games. And again, like, I think he'll be fine, but I don't think it's really notable. I'm glad he landed somewhere, like where he can still play, because that's what he wants to do, and he proved that late last season that he still has, that he's still probably a starting NBA point guard, right? Like, I mean, Rondo at the end of last year, the level he was playing at, for as bad as he was early in the year, I think the level he was playing at the end of the season was certainly starting caliber compared when you put it in the sense of 30 NBA teams, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I would think that his fit in New Orleans is not nearly as awkward of a fit as the three alphas. I think his fit with those two three alphas in DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis, those three alphas I think are a little bit more of a natural fit just because both of those big guys can play a little bit on the perimeter and stretch it out a little bit. I feel like that's a better fit than the three alphas we had in Chicago with Wade and Butler.
It just feels like he left a team with no three-point shooting and went to another team with below-average three-point shooting that isn't going to help him probably flourish in the best way you could. But, hey, I mean, that's what he gets. He's 31, going on 32 here, yeah. I think. Like, he's not – you don't build teams around Rajon Rondo anymore. So, I mean, I guess that's that point is – falls on deaf ears for me to make. So, like, you're never going to find a perfect situation for him. So, I guess good for Rondo. Like, it's cool. It's cool for both sides.
Yeah. No, I think it's fine. Where's Derrick Rose going to go?
I have no idea. I have literally no idea. Wait, wasn't Jimmy Butler supposed to predict that on Bill Simmons' podcast? And I only listened to, like, the first 57 minutes of it. And I feel like he got to that after the hour mark. Did he give an answer?
He said he doesn't know. He said he hasn't talked to him.
I'm on Team Jimmy on this. I have no idea. Like, do you have a clue?
I think China. I think that's a possibility.
That is an absolutely astonishing fall from grace, if that's true.
Ty Lawson just signed in China. And then also Mario Chalmers, who is coming off a torn Achilles, just signed a deal with the Grizzlies. And so if, like, teams are already looking at these options and saying, you know, I think Mario Chalmers coming off a torn Achilles is a better option than Derrick Rose, like, I'm not saying that's accurate, because I think Derrick Rose is a better basketball player than Mario Chalmers right now, but if that's the way front offices are thinking, like, I really think there's a possibility he ends up in China.
I mean, I'm going through the RotoWire NBA depth charts right now, team by team point guard situation, and I'm more than halfway through the league, and I don't see anywhere that really makes sense. Could you see him going back to Memphis in a reserve role? He played there a year in college. Could he play for the Grizzlies on a small contract and try to bring something on the bench? But then, I mean, they got Wade Baldwin involved still. Like, that's a guy they want playing time too. Like, I'm just spitballing here at anything and everything, and I mean, we've talked about this off the air. We've talked about our friends with it, other NBA people, and I think they're clueless too. Like, I guess I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I have no idea. I really just do not know what the way forward for him is, which is why I think he might end up, you know, he can make a lot of money in China. His shoe still sells very well there. He can be a big star. It might be good for him just to rehabilitate his career, his image, at least for 1 year, and then see what the market is, you know, in March when he comes back from China.
Well, he's always had a huge, like, presence and attraction over there, right? Like, he used to do the summertime shoe tours over there, and not quite to the level of Kobe Bryant, but he is certainly beloved over there. One of the most beloved NBA players, it always feels like, when he goes over there. And I know they go bonkers for a lot of guys, but, like, Derrick Rose is really up there. So by way of, like, just basketball environment, it's completely different and many notches below the NBA. But, like, I feel like there'd still be a little bit of juice there if you want to continue your career in a way that would be better than maybe some European countries playing in their basketball leagues.
Yeah, it's possible. So it'll be interesting to see. I think that'll probably do it for today. Next week, we'll record again. I will be back in Chicago. We won't be doing this remotely anymore, which I think will be good.
Yeah, in person. And we're gonna throw out a we'll have basically an all mailbag locked on Bulls for all you guys' questions, in which I fully expect you guys to ask, what's the Nico Mirotić situation when 7 days from now or 4 days from now it's like the same thing or whatever, and we'll probably rehash some of the same stuff. But no, we certainly will want your questions. We'll have an all mailbag episode soon. Sound like an idea, Sean?
Yeah, I think that's what we're going to have to do, unless the Nico thing happens and there's actually news to talk about. Yeah, so send those questions in. Send them to us on Twitter at LockedOnBulls. Email them to us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. Also email us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com if you want to advertise with us. If you want, you know, sponsor us, give us money, help us keep producing the show.
Sounds great. We love you guys. We'll catch you next time.